Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Hey, and welcome to Mainstream by Sifter. My name is Adam. Thank you for joining us. If this is your first time listening to the show, welcome. On Mainstream, the team behind sifter.com.au discuss their experiences playing a variety of games. Everything from AAA titles, smaller micro games, retro re-releases, it's all covered here. And this week, we're kind of diving into the world of narrative fiction, which I'm really excited about. Gianni has been stepping through time and into a giant mech suit as part of 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim, a game that originally came out in 2020 by Vanillaware on PlayStation 4, but is out now, finally, on another platform, the Nintendo Switch.
It's a lot of fun. It's the sort of game that actually suits the Switch really well, because you get to play it in lots of little chunks. It's definitely unlike anything I've played before, but there's a lot of stuff in there reminiscent of other genre pieces in science fiction. We're going to rave about this game. It's really, really impressive and something different. Can't wait for you to find out a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm excited to dive in. I played this one last year on PlayStation and it was a blast. But before we get into that, let's find out what's making the news this week on Walkthrough.
This is Mainstream.
Sentinels Aegis Rim. It's a long title for a game that is quite perplexing at times. Gianni has been diving into this game. Gianni, what is 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim?
It is part visual novel, part sort of point-and-click adventure game. It's part real-time strategy game, almost more like a turn-based strategy. I think the real-time aspect of it is sort of underplayed. And it is a big spanning story which goes across multiple different characters and perspectives. And as you work your way through the game, you learn little pieces more about what this big branching story is. It's twists galore, I think is how we described it. It is just very interesting, and like it's such a compelling story that's being told. The framing of it is basically when you start the game, it's like many other anime you've seen. It's a high school drama. There are a bunch of different characters that you are talking to. You start off playing as a character called Juro Kurabe, who is talking to his classmates, finding out what's going on. He wants to work out whether he wants to go hang out and play video games with his friends, or he's talking to the girls in his class. All of this sort of stuff starts to come together. But things very quickly start to not make sense, or they start to be a little bit weird. And that's where we're sort of introduced to the world of the Sentinels, which appear in 1985 when this first part of the game is set. And these giant robots drop in from nowhere, effectively. They kind of pop in and all of a sudden you're in a robot battle. It does sound a little bit like Neon Genesis Evangelion, and I think that was one of the ideas that they were kind of pulling on. There's also that sort of magical girl aspect to it as well, of things like Sailor Moon. And there's lots of references to other pop cultural franchises that you would be familiar with. But that's kind of the setup of it. You kind of work your way through, and there's different sort of time periods as you're working through this thing. That's kind of the conceit, that there's a sort of a time travel aspect to this game as you're sort of unraveling the history and learning more about the characters that you meet. And there's 13 playable characters as you work your way through this game. So there's a lot of different perspectives and they all overlap and cross over, and you get given different insights to the story as you play from different perspectives.
Yeah, it's what I'd almost like to describe as like a very fractured storytelling process. And I'm kind of curious about your experiences with this. So Narratively, it's very non-linear, and you have a lot of control as the player in terms of what chapter you're going to jump into next, which character you're going to inhabit. There might be some slight gates in terms of like when you can unlock a character's story to start progressing, but you have a lot of freedom to kind of go here and there, and it could all be a horrible mess because you've given so much freedom in terms of where and what you just watch in what part. And I'm wondering how you felt about how that all came together and if it kind of created a coherent narrative.
I think it's more of an illusion of a lot of freedom than there actually is in this game, because the gating on what where you can progress and how far you can go sort of gets you to bounce between the two different modes in the game. So there's the story mode, it's called Remembrance in this game, where you're basically trying to work out what the deal is, effectively, where it's sort of you're running around in a world, the point and click adventure sort of version of it. And then between that, you are jumping into it's kind of like, you know, you've seen this done in anime, I'm sure, where they're basically cutting back and forth between what's happened in the past, what's happening in the present, all of these things here. And you're moving into the battle. So basically, I played it pretty quickly because it was so, so interesting. I just couldn't really put it down. You kind of find that as you work through these different perspectives, you can say choose to play as, you know, one of the characters and go off in this direction, or you might play as another one. But the way I played it was mostly I would pick a character I wanted to learn the story of and then play all the way through their story as far as I could go before I hit a limit, before they had to progress in some other aspect before I could move on. And part of that could be, either doing a few battles in the real-time strategy mode when you're playing with the mechs, or it could be you needed to progress in another character's story to a certain point before you could move on. So for me, it didn't feel disjointed. It actually felt like it was moving pretty cleverly through, and you were given the right amount of choice, but nothing too over the top. And as you said, with that, it could potentially have felt disjointed, but I think the real craft in the way that this story has been told is that it's really cleverly put together, and you know, you revisit many of the same locations again and again and again. You know, if you look at the number of screens in the game, if you think of it like a point and click game, there's probably maybe 20 screens that you actually visit. Like, you know, we're not
talking, I was going to say around 20. Yeah.
There's probably only about that. But you're going back to those different places in different contexts and different times and different perspectives from different characters. So, you know, when you visit all those different places again and again, it's reused in a really clever way. And it just makes a lot of sense the way they've done it. It just feels like quite an innovative way to tell a story like this, which could have very easily been so confusing and, like, you know, one of these games where you have to literally read the wiki in order to work out exactly what they were trying to work out here. It's not that tricky to pick up what's going on. And also there's like quite a bit of, you know, there's like a whole separate mode where you can basically check the notes of what's happening, which may be really helpful if you haven't played for a little while and you wanted to come back to it. You could go and read up on what has happened up to that point of the character's story. It's like a little chronological unlocking mode of each character.
What I really liked about it is there's also a currency that you earn from the battles that allow you to unlock entries in that mode. And so there might be like a character that you're just like, who are you? What is your deal? You keep popping up in all these different character stories and they have a locked entry that might cost a certain amount of mystery points or whatever. And you know the first thing you're going to do is like buy that codex so that it can start unraveling the kind of secrets behind who this character is. I thought that was a really interesting way to make a codex kind of gamified and fun and worth digging through that I don't think a lot of games think about. Another thing that I really enjoyed about this game is, like you said, there's sort of this illusion of choice with the narrative. It's like you might have four places that you can go at any point in the game, but those four places are kind of picked in a certain way that there will always be a new interesting revelation in each of those story beats that plays into one of the other four places you might be able to head at that point in time and gets you excited about what's coming next after that, or has you asking questions in the narrative about what things could mean. And I feel like that is such a hard thing to balance and achieve, and I cannot believe this game has managed to do that. And it's because it's such a narrative game, we can't really talk about what some of those revelations are, but just like everything felt like it paid off for me when I played this game. And like you, I voraciously devoured it within like a week. I just had to keep playing it until I finished it.
I think the big thing to keep in mind is that, characters that appear in one player's perspective almost, you know, the next level you play, they will be appearing in that other, in your perspective, or, you know, as you shift around, you get different ideas of what it was. Now, there's this example that I can give, which tells you about, you first start playing as Jiro Karabe, and then you start going through the world, and some of the characters that you talk to, there's a character called Tomi Kisaragi in this, and she's a, you know, one of your schoolmates. You go and walk over next to her in the classroom, the first classroom that you start in, and if you stand next to her and kind of eavesdrop on her conversation, sort of the thing that you do in every single video game, she'll kind of stop and go, can I help you? And when you eventually get to take over Tomi's perspective, Juro, the NPC character, comes over and just does that and just sort of stands there, and then you, as the player character, acknowledge them, and then they kind of wander off. And it's like, that was such a little thing, but I thought, wow, that is really clever about the way that people, they wanted people to do this particular thing. Just about everyone would have done it, and they would have got that interaction when they played, and then they replicate it from the other perspective. So, you know, you get to see these little pieces of the puzzle come together. And yeah, it, you know, because not everyone has the same information for every character that you're playing, it, you get treated to different pieces of information. You go, oh, hang on a second. So that's what was happening in this particular thing, which we were left on a cliffhanger at the end of the last little segment. You know, they all have these little to be continued things that pop up once you finish one of the story segments as well. So yeah, it is tricky to talk about this game because I think so much of it is spoilery, but it's a very, I would say that, you know, thematically there's a lot of references to those 1980s franchises that you would be familiar with. So there's a lot of that sort of high school drama that you would have seen. There's a lot of Evangelion in it. There's things like sci-fi franchises that you would be referred to. They're also like referred to almost directly as well. They talk about how there's a, you know, a popular franchise that started in 1977 that's still popular today, you know, and things like that. And all of this stuff is sort of tied into that, and the way that they use that is really clever in the way that it sort of feels like it's just like, oh, tongue-in-cheek sort of reference-y ways, but then it actually becomes more important as you move through the story because it actually makes more sense as to why those things were included.
Yeah, every reference is integral to the story's plot, which is kind of amazing, which is why we're not naming the references.
Exactly, yeah. And what I think really helps with this game as well is that, one, it's got a really good soundtrack. It just is like that sort of pumping, energetic end of the world sort of sci-fi battles, but it's, you know, interspersed with you know, like pop idols singing and things like that as well. So it just feels like you're playing through an anime series. And the voice acting, and I play this game in English with subtitles, and the voice acting in it is really good. There's some really great examples where, you know, the characters just feel really interesting. And even like when you're in the battle mode, once the characters kind of have a bit more familiar with themselves, they kind of have this sort of banter back and forth, which is really funny. It just feels like they've done an excellent job localizing this game and kind of capturing some of the perspectives in this thing. So yeah, there's some genuinely funny bits in it. It's actually like a really interestingly well-told story. If you're like a real lover of sci-fi stories as I am, it gave me a lot to sort of mull over as I was playing this game.
There are a lot of characters in 13 Sentinels, and it's hard for us to talk about them in depth because of spoilers, but are there any that stood out for you that you can kind of vaguely refer to as to why you like those particular characters?
There are some ones I really like, which were, you know, they're taking some of those anime and manga trope characters and kind of you understand why. So there's like a main character in there called Nenji Ogata, who is one of those like standard Japanese anime high school drama bully dudes with the pompadour and everything like that. It's set in the 1980s, you know, they can really pull on a lot of that feeling of what those sort of things that people would have read. And he turns out to be like quite a complex character. When you look at him initially, when you meet him the first few times, he seems like this guy who's just like a bit of a punk kid. And then you realize that he's a rich kid, and then, you know, his story comes out. But he actually is quite, he's got quite a interesting complex relationship with the other characters as well, which really I thought subverted a lot of what you'd expect from that sort of character as well. But again, it sort of does also feed into that. I mean, Tomi Kisaragi is another character who's really excellent. I mean, they're all excellent. They're actually just like, there's not a character I disliked in this game at all. They were all really, really good. Tomi is just like this sort of you know, square head on her shoulders, just head down trying to work out the mystery, really self-driven, not prone to getting kind of like flustered by things, and really passionate about her friends, and very funny too, and like really like Saki and acerbic and things like that. So, you know, there's like the Natsuno, who is a character who loves science fiction and like is getting like excited when all the science fiction elements come into the world that she's in.
You can't talk about aliens without seeing that movie.
I don't really intend on talking about aliens anyway.
Bet you're thinking, here she goes about those UFOs again. No, not at all. You'd be the same if you watched this. They're already here on Earth, you know.
Yeah, they look like octopuses and want to destroy us all, right?
No. You've got it all wrong. That's from a book. You're thinking of the War of the Worlds.
Oh, Nat-chan. There's no stopping you once you get going on this stuff.
Just watch. One of these days, I'll work for NASA, and I'm gonna find a real alien.
You're gonna have to get better grades in science, then.
Oh, man, you're right.
So many of these things. What about you, Adam?
Oh, look, this game's character cast is brilliant. I think you already highlighted Nenji Ogata, who I think for me was the standout character in terms of growth and development and kind of seeing how far he went from being a one-dimensional sort of bully character that was kind of the butt of jokes at the beginning of the game to really kind of working out who this person was and their complex relationships with the others was wonderful. I thought, I think it's Kitaro Moira is great too. I can't say anything about his character because it really just, it's one of the first big revelations of the game when you realize what's going on with him. And that to me, another fantastic character, a very fish out of the pond sort of character who's like struggling to fit in at the environment that he finds himself in. That's about as vague as I can get. And also shout outs to Fluffy the cat that people keep seeing around the school. There's a lot more to Fluffy than I can say, but a very fantastic character that I was not anticipating to be in a game like this. But every time they showed up, just kind of made scenes quite just weird and odd. And yeah, there's so many twists and turns in this game and so many great characters to sort of dig into. It's rare that I say this, but it's without a doubt one of my favorite visual novel sort of narrative experiences that I've played in a game in recent years. I think it's a real, real special one. And as you've said, the localization is really great. I think a lot of times games like this can have issues with localization or can translate poorly or get lost. And considering this is such a dense, heady, completely outlandish sci-fi plot that goes to some wild places, the fact that they pulled it all off and made it completely legible and understandable and easy to follow without having to like rip open multiple wikis is a huge achievement.
I think as well, what it does excellently is that it's exactly the sort of story where you think at some point you're like, oh, that guy's the bad guy, or this person's the bad guy, or what's going on here? And it teases you enough so that you start to think, hang on a second, I know what's going on, and then twists around. So, you know, as I said, this is probably quite a frustrating episode to listen to, but it is because it is such a story that relies upon you coming into this as cold as possible. What we can talk about, it, you know, in some detail is the real-time strategy aspect of the game, where you basically take these giant robots that the 13 characters control and you fight on sort of waves of enemies, and there's certain objectives and certain modes where you need to like take out a certain boss or something like that. Adam, can you tell me, what did you think about the real-time strategy aspect of playing as the Sentinel and fighting in sort of mech battles in this game?
Yeah, well, they were definitely a part of the game, weren't they? I mean, that's a generous way to put it, which is I think it is an interesting experimental attempt at doing like tower defense, essentially, because the way that these missions sort of structure themselves out is you're always defending like a control point. And the enemies that you're fighting, these giant mech kaiju that are invading like 1980s Tokyo, basically, are your fodder. And so every character has a different class. There's like four classes of mechs. Different characters get a different class, but every character has different sort of abilities that they can access for their class of mech, which makes them pretty niche. So I just found that there is some potential depth there, and you can upgrade your mechs and you can really hone in and specialize on particular characters, that at times it was a little bit grindy. Even though I was playing on normal difficulty, I felt that once I found a strategy that was really easy for me, it was more just a case of waiting out the timer and kind of getting through each mission that way. And I used a lot of kind of like Sentinel kind of turret drones, just kind of like very defensive orientated play, because it is kind of like a point defense really, and found that made things really kind of easy, And then when you've got kind of some of the bruiser mechs as well that do massive amounts of damage, you can just sort of bounce a couple of those around the map while everyone else kind of defends. And it became sort of like a process of almost every mission felt like it was accomplished using the same strategies. So, you know, I don't think it's the high point of the game. It's definitely nice to have in there. And it's interesting because of what narrative revelations come out in that game mode as well. There's a lot of story in there too. And that kind of kept me going through those battle missions. But I really almost feel like this game would have been totally fine if it was just a complete visual novel. I would have had the same good experience. But it was nice to bounce back and forth. I don't think it was like the best version of like a tower defense real-time strategy sort of experience that I played, but I guess it was in here and it was fine. So, yeah.
I played it on the easy mode, the casual mode, because I was like, I'm really into this for the story and the pieces of coming. I love mech battles and things like that, but I just don't want to be in a game where I know that I'm really grinding against this. And, you know, playing it that way, it was really kind of fun to just rack up ridiculous combos effectively. You kind of just get your characters together, put them into a position. So for example, you might have, you know, one character that can do like a gravity bomb, which pulls all of your the enemies in an area towards a certain point. And then you have a character which has got like a massive sniper railgun thing, and you'd kind of pull them to a point so they're all in one place and then blast them with the other character. So lining up a few of those things were really quite fun. I again used a lot of the turrets as well. I found that, you know, as the first part of the battle is starting and you're setting up your defenses, I had a couple of characters who were rotated through where they would just be throwing out shields on my team, dropping down turrets for everyone, and then as soon as the first few enemies started appearing on the map, they'd be dropping down these basically lures that would, you know, draw the enemies towards a specific point. But, you know, I did quite like the way that they do that, and what they do to balance that so that you're not always using the same characters every single time is that there is a bonus mission story unlock that you can get for using specific characters and specific missions. It'll ask you to use a combination of a couple of characters, or, you know, maybe limits the number of characters as well. You could use up to 6 in a battle if you wanted to, but some of them ask for you to just do 4. So you're thinking about, all right, what 4 characters can I use in order to achieve the task here? And while you're doing that, you're managing their fatigue effectively. So, you know, you can't use the same characters every single time. You can basically use them twice in a row, and then they need to sit a whole battle out in order to do that. So balancing between which characters you're going to pick for each mission, knowing that you want to make sure that you've kept a broad range of people around so that if the bonus objective appears and you need to use a specific character, you don't want that character to be on the bench at that point. So that was quite fun. It in the easy mode, it was just like you just stomped through. There never felt like the point that we're defending ever got damaged at all. The city barely ever gets damaged as well. My mechs never got immobilized effectively, but it was just fun to kind of blast your way through it. And then, yeah, use that as a way to sort of have that vehicle for the story as you're working through. So pretty fun. It's quite a simplistic real-time strategy game. You know, your mechs do appear in some abilities. You get to see what they look like in a 3D render, but most of the time they just look like a little space invader, and most of the enemies just look like space invaders too. So, you know, that there is a reason for that when you play through the game, but it is it's pretty fun, and I think it's an interesting way to tell the story with sort of interspersed action. And I just, everything I think about this game, it comes back to it. This game is a game that you play, which is a series, an anime series, effectively, and you're doing the interspersed action in between while the story is being delivered in cutaways and things like that. So that's kind of how I framed it when I was thinking that. Does that sort of sit about where you kind of came to as well?
Absolutely. Your reference to the fact that the art design for the battle mode has like a lore reference to it was something I did not think of, but absolutely makes sense now that I know everything that I know about this game's narrative, and I feel like my mind has just been blown again by how great this game is. Yeah, I mean, like, absolutely. It's kind of like a nice palate cleanse, even though I wish it had more depth. But also, I'm grateful for the battle system because that's where the most slappin' parts of the soundtrack are in this game as well. And they're very good. So I'm grateful for that too.
What I would say, this game is, it's set in a high school drama, and just like a lot of anime series, it's real thirsty. It's a real horny game for like these teenagers who are kind of like working out who they are. Some of the fan service-y bits are a bit on the nose, I found personally. You're probably going to be able to get through it pretty easily. It's not the worst I have ever seen in an anime series, but it's kind of like some of these characters, the way they've been designed, you're like, that is literally done either as a direct reference to something else that's happened in, you know, other media, but you kind of look at it and you go, come on.
Yeah, there is one character who is on the track team and she is like a pro gun athlete, and it's like she is in the shortest running shorts I've ever seen, and I was just like, okay, vanilla wear, sure. If I didn't like this character so much and she wasn't complex and full of depth in a great story, I would have turned it off, because I have a low bar for like kind of gross fan service-y stuff too. And so when it does pop up, you're a little bit like, but I guess it's surrounded by so much interesting, good stuff here. I mean, like, we've barely touched in it, but one of these characters in the game is like a really fascinating representation of trans non-binary identity and is handled really well, particularly in the localization. And I just think is such a complex, interesting character. So to have that kind of alongside like the school nurse, who is perhaps a little bit over-sexualized, I think I can say that, just a little bit, like maybe slightly over-sexualized, is it's almost a trade-off where I'm like, fine, I'll take it. I'm not happy about it, but I've seen far worse in other games, like the Persona series, for example. Like, I don't think it goes into like the sort of gross territories that some of the cutscenes in Persona 5 Royal did, where I just felt like the tone of the game completely shifted into another territory at times, which made me a bit uncomfortable while playing that. So yeah, take that with a grain of salt, and be aware that if that sort of stuff does kind of bother you, it might bother you here as well.
Yeah. But otherwise, art-wise, I think it's a really pretty game to look at. As you said, it's like, you know, the character designs are quite cool. It has a really visual, like, it actually reminds me a lot of the style that they use in some of the Final Fantasy Tactics games, for example. The way that the characters are designed, sort of like almost like noseless faces that they do in some of these anime designs. And I would sort of think that, you know, that those aspects of it, if you even, you know, given it being as most generous, like part of it is probably is just that this is being fan service-y, but, you know, being generous with the story of what all the rest of the other aspects of it, there could be a lore reason as to why particular characters are sort of focused on in that particular way, when you think of the age of the characters of the people you're playing. So, you know, it's interesting to think about. There's some bits in it that sort of feel like when you recontextualize it with a bit more information as you go, you go, you know, maybe this isn't exactly right. But, you know, for the few small issues that you might have with this game, I think it is, it's mind-blowingly good in a way that is such a complex story and really fascinating. You'd just be on the edge of your seat as you play it.
So Gianni, who is 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim for? If not, like, the obvious answer is weebs out there that might like a game like this. And also, I guess it's for me and you, I suppose, because we both had a good time. But who do you think would really enjoy going into 13 Sentinels?
Like a story that you can play episodically, you know, someone who wants a little bit of something that you can get, you're always going to be the edge of your seat as you play through this. It works brilliantly on the Switch because, you know, most people play the Switch in little bursts, especially for playing in the handheld mode. So you can kind of play a little bit, half an hour, and you'll get a lot of really valuable story development and interesting stuff that comes out of this. It's for people who love 1990s and 1980s anime, pop culture. There's a lot of that in there as well. For people who love those really interesting sci-fi stories as well, who just love speculative sci-fi stories as well, it ticks a lot of the boxes in terms of things that you would like if you've played, you know, or watched other games set in sort of future worlds. Also, I think it's just something that's a bit different. You know, it might be something you probably wouldn't have played a huge amount of in the past. I know I've played a few, like, I know a lot of point and click adventure games. That was my sort of era when I grew up. But, you know, playing this sort of hybrid sort of point and click visual novel style game from a Japanese developer is not something that I'm super duper familiar with, but I was really intrigued with this, and I have been left wanting more for this particular genre. What do you reckon?
I think I've never played an RPG or a narrative game quite like this. I think it's utterly unique, very interesting, completely fascinating. If you love science fiction, and I mean all science fiction from like weird schlocky Japanese references to like straight up big blockbuster Western stuff from the 80s, there is a reference here. There is a touch point here for you that you did not see coming, that you will find intriguing to see how it warps itself into this game's world. I think it is unlike anything else I've played, basically. And I think it's worth checking out just for that, just to experience something very different than what's really out there at the moment. So that's 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim by Vanillaware, published by Sega and Atlas. Thank you again to the publisher providing us with a copy of the game on Nintendo Switch for review.
It's time. I may be just a schoolgirl, but now I'm a schoolgirl with a giant robot.
Sit down for a chat with your pals in video games. This is Mainstream.
This has been Mainstream by Sifter. It's what video games the Sifter team have been playing. Thanks again to Brian Fairbanks from Salty Dog Sounds for composing the Mainstream theme music, and thanks to Omni Studio for their support of Sifter's three podcasts. Sifter is produced by Nicholas Kennedy, Kyle Paletto, Fiona Bartholomeus, Daniel Ang, and me, Adam Christou. Mitch Lowe is our senior producer, and Gianni Di Giovanni is our executive producer and my co-host on the show this week. Gianni, where can listeners find you on the internet? If they want to get your hot takes, they want to find out what you're up to, where can they find you?
Discord, actually. Honestly, I think that's probably the best place to find me. I'm always in the Sifter Discord, and I'm posting screenshots and other bits and pieces from our games we've been playing, things that we've got for review, and all of that sort of stuff. So that's really the place to do it, and you can see all the links and things that I post there as well, because I spend too much time online. If you want to join the Sifter Discord, it's pretty easy. You can go to sifter.com.au/discord. We've also got a cool thing where people share their creative work every week. Basically, we've got a bunch of creators as part of our Discord. And each week, people who are making games, or they're making, you know, Warhammer models, or they're doing 3D printing, all of that sort of stuff, they share it and we get to check out cool creative stuff. And each week we give them a shout out. So if that sounds like you, if you are making something and you want to share it, and it can be in progress, it can be whatever, we just love the creative process. Come and join us on sifter.com.au/Discord. While you're online as well, you should also give Sifter a follow on social media. We're on Twitter, on Instagram. You can find us on Twitch and YouTube as well. The account you want to look for is @SifterHQ. That's the account. So search for SifterHQ on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, and all of your favorite social media platforms.
Yeah, and we've also got multiple podcasts, three in fact. One of them is called Lightmap. That's where we talk to game devs, creatives, people who are doing stuff in interactive media, and kind of get an understanding of how they actually make these things. We've also got Walkthrough, which is our weekly recap of the biggest news in video games. We kind of go through everything there. Recent releases, things that have been happening in the worlds of game dev, controversies, patch notes, all sorts of stuff happens in Walkthrough. So head to your podcast player and type in Sifter and give us a follow, and you can get every episode of Lightmap, Walkthrough, and Mainstream for free.
We've got a website as well where we post the long reviews of this. So if you happen to be listening to an episode of Mainstream and you want to see some pictures of the game, some of our thoughts in written format, you can head to sifter.com.au where we'll put everything up. We'll also have all of our other information up there as well. So all of our interviews, all of our videos, all of our previews, all of that stuff, sifter.com.au. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend who you think would enjoy it, because that's really important for independent podcasts like us. Telling a friend that you think this is a cool thing that they might like, that will make a big deal to them. It'll also be really great for supporting the team of independent journalists at Sifter as well.
Yeah, and if you want to support us in another way, we have drip. I think that's the term that youngs use. I don't know. I'm getting old. I don't know what I'm talking about. We have merch. You can head to sifter.store to buy really cool Australian-made and designed video game shirts, and support us that way as well. So that's sifter.store if you want to, yeah, get some threads, get some cool drip, you know, rock out on TikTok as the number one fan, if you will. That's been Mainstream for this week. It has been a fun time as always, Gianni. Thank you again for joining me to talk about all things 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim. Until next time, have fun. Go outside, play some games, all that good stuff.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.